woods and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State on the Michigan Talk Network and all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com, our website where you can pick up the podcast and find our great sponsors like Conquest Sense. We're getting to be at that time. Actually, right now, Conquest Sense, you can use the Evercalm year-round, because if you're going out to check trail cams or going out to move stands around, you want a little bit of that on you because it is a cover scent, and it's kind of a curiosity scent. So, you know, the deer will know a deer has been there or several deer have been there, but you know what? They'll be less inclined to notice human if you are doing all the scent cover things that you're supposed to be doing. ConquestSense.com is where you can find that. And Wednesday night is auction night. Remember, coming up next Wednesday, the next auction at NotJustGuns.com for all kinds of great new and pre-owned firearms. They've got ammunition, accessories, all of the other great stuff that you expect at a gun store. And they are the friendly guys in the gun store business. And that's what I like about them. They do a great job, and they are very, very helpful. They don't give you that, you know, that what are you doing in here look when you go to buy a gun. And believe me, I've gotten that look several times from several places over the years. Now, let's talk a little bit of fishing with David A. Rose. It's been a while, David, since we've spoke to you. And it's been a rather wet year. And I saw a news story that said the Great Lakes have like X amount of trillion gallons been added to them this year. In bodies of water that size, you wouldn't think that that's a huge difference, but it's a huge deal.
Oh, it's a very huge deal. Right now, if you go to a boat launch, you might want to consider bringing a pair of hip waders, too, because you're going to get wet feet walking to the dock.
It's crazy.
So, I know. And, you know, what am I now, 51, blah, blah, blah. I graduated back in 86, and so that's how I remember these dates. 86, 87, we were dealing with these very similar high water levels and stuff like that, and I had gone to several different, oh my goodness, all sorts of things with biologists and all these different meetings and where they explain everything. And yeah, we're in part of that 30-year cycle right now, so probably this year and next year we're going to see some really high water, and that does a lot to the environment, both good and bad.
Now let's talk about the good. We know that, you know, when we have this kind of water, you know, the drought issue isn't a problem. You know, the lakes shrinking, I mean, which is the panic here a while ago, you know, and having an issue with that. But what is the detriment? What is the detriment to the freshwater fishing system, aside from we can't get out there?
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's more difficult. Well, we can get out there. It's just you're going to get a little bit more wet. So part of the good right off the bat is, so this high water comes up, it's leaching into all these grasses and trees and stuff like this on the shoreline, adds more nutrients to the water, and it's very good for younger of the year fish. So maybe if you're a smallmouth fisherman or walleye or whoever, these young of the year fish now have a place to hide. There's more nutrients, there's more, you know, plankton and all that kind of stuff going on because of this high water. So that can be very good for future fish, you know, fisheries. Now, of course, high water is damaging. So, I mean, you can just drive, let's say you go past Huron or St. Clair or Michigan or wherever, and you're driving along and you're seeing, I mean, high water can be very damaging. Houses falling in, you know, eroding shorelines, that kind of thing. So, yeah, there's pluses and minuses, you know, both.
Pluses for the fish, us not so much.
yeah, exactly. It's a little more harder on us humans, but, you know, the water's going to go down again, and, you know, another couple of years we might be complaining it's harder to launch your boat because you have to back your vehicle in further to get it off the trailer, you know? So this is just part of, it's just nature's way. A buddy of mine used to say that. It's just nature's way. And, I mean, I can get into some of the in-depth stuff. I'm not a biologist. I'm not a scientist. I just, you know, write about this stuff. But, you know, sunspots, this kind of thing, that kind of thing, solar flares. I mean, it all affects our weather, and it all affects our high and low water levels.
Now, David A. Rose is our guest here, outdoor writer and fishing guide. You've been out fishing. You say the past couple of weeks you've been out doing a lot of fishing, which is great to hear. So what has been the hot thing? What have you been doing? Are you doing trout streams? Are you doing big water fishing? What are you going after?
Well, I tell you, the trout streams have been a little difficult just because of those high water levels we were talking
sure.
about. Literally, this morning, just before you and I are chatting, it was pouring rain here up in the Traverse City area where I'm at. And this morning I went and grabbed a coffee and, you know, drove down the road, went over a couple creeks I like to look at and stuff like that. And yeah, they're just blown out. So these, you know, the trout fishing has been a little more difficult just because of the high water. They've been feasting heavily. We're starting to see some bug hatches and stuff like that, which is good, but boy, it's almost hard to get into the river. But, yeah, I've been doing some stuff like a little bit of walleye fishing, a little bit of smallmouth bass fishing, and I'll tell you what's been crazy here on the Grand Traverse Bays in the Traverse City area. Cisco, which is a Lake Herring slash Tulibee, these fish, the waters have been, let's say, in the Grand Traverse Bays have been in the mid-50s, and the lake trout and the Cisco have been in the shallows, and we have had a blast catching just fish after fish up in the shallows, casting spoons and kind of hopping spoons, like a little Cleo or, you know, all sorts of different kinds of spoons, literally hopping them along bottom almost like a goby because those fish are coming in shallow and they're eating gobies right now. And it's just been a fun, fun bite.
David A. Rose is our guest here on Wild Michigan, being brought to you by Not Just Guns. In Mason, on Cedar at 127, Wednesday night, gun auction night. And David, educate me about the Cisco a little bit here. Eating fish? I've never caught one, so everybody's probably laughing at me right now. But this is one of those things that, you know, we don't always catch everything.
No, right. And we're here in the Traverse City area, you know, with this portion of Lake Michigan and stuff like that, we've got an amazing Lake Herring slash Cisco fishery going on right now. There, I guess, that, again, I'm still learning about all this kind of stuff, but there is the species of Cisco that we're having right here is a strain that is actually kind of a Lake Superior strain, and these fish are like 3, 4, 5 pound fish, where, you know, years ago, when I do the inland lakes around here, there's Lake Herring, and, you know, a 15-inch Cisco would be a pretty good, darn good sized fish.
Sure.
And I mean, we're talking 3, 4, 5 pound fish right now. So this fishery up here is really taking off for the Cisco. They are an eating fish, a little oilier. They're actually like in the whitefish family, which is also in the salmonid family. So little oilier meat, really good if you smoke them, make great chowder. I like to put them right on the grill, you know, and cook them up that way. So they are a really good eating fish.
Well, that sounds like one I need to add to the menu, if you will.
Well, yeah, we'll get up here. Yeah.
Well, you know, we've been talking. I don't even want to go into that because we've talked about that for 13 years, 14 years now. But as we are going into our 14th year, if you can believe that. I can't. I just can't. But it's happening, man. We've learned a lot of things along the way, a lot of them from you and every other guest that we've had here. A little bit later on, we're going to talk to our good friend Doug Roberts from Conquest Sense. Doug will be talking about the new fawns and antler growth with this wet season. And it seems, David, too, a lot of conversation is going around the wet season we have had here because we've not had one like this in a very long time. I mean, 86, yeah, I was around. I was, you know, 20 years old, but I don't think I was paying a lot of attention to weather patterns at that time as I do when I get older.
Yeah, you know, I paid attention to them just because, you know, I was getting into the outdoor writing field and stuff like that. And this was great stuff to talk about and to understand. And, you know, like I said, I've worked alongside with some great biologists and stuff, from everyone from the DNR to, it doesn't matter, federal guys and stuff like that. And, you know, they really care about this stuff. And I'll tell you what, there's a lot of great information out there from these folks that they know what they're talking about. And so I paid attention. Yeah.
All right. David A. Rose, will pay attention to him more coming up in the next segment here on Wild Michigan, Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an hour to time. Interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State on the Michigan Talk Network. Appreciate all the great affiliates that carry our show. And if you can't reach us via terrestrial radio, you can always find us online at wildmichiganradio.com. Pick up the podcast there. And we are being brought to you by Conquest Sense. Find them online at conquestsense.com. And we'll be talking to Doug Roberts in the next segments of the show. Right now, we're speaking with David A. Rose, outdoor writer and wild fishing guide. David, I want to talk a little bit about big lake fishing, about how the king salmon, you know, our kings, our cohos, the numbers have been down. But when I looked at my friend Hunter's page over at Best Chance Charters, they had a couple of really nice king. I mean, like 26-pound kings. Big fish.
Big fish. Time of year, that's a excuse me, that's a very big fish for this time of year. And that's what's awesome right now is, you know, there's such a controversy going on, you know, with, you know, of course, the alewives have been disappearing because the environment of the Lake Michigan and Huron and all that has changed and yada, yada, yada. We're seeing less fish, but they're bigger. Does that mean they're better? Maybe not. But here's what I like about it. It's almost... it's like we're respecting that fish even a little better. So instead of just another limit of Chinook or coho or whatever, because there's been so much bait in the past and whatnot, you get a king, you get a couple coho, you do whatever, you respect that fish better. You're not just tossing it in the cooler. You're placing it in the cooler on ice. You want, you know, if you're going to eat it, you want that fish to be the best it can. So, you know, I'm not going to say I like it, because the numbers were fun. I mean, it was obviously great to go out and have, you know, 37 fish on or something like sure. that, whatever. But I like how we're respecting our resource a little better because it's more difficult to catch salmon.
Well, you know, and I've brought this point up before. Back in the 60s, the alewife was an invasive species, and it was, what are we going to do about them? You know, we have this problem. And all of a sudden, what are we going to do without them? We have this problem.
Yeah, I know. It's really gone. It's gone. Almost totally opposite. And you know, yeah, I don't say about the biology of it and stuff like that. Again, I'm not a biologist or anything like that. But again, it's just the respect of our resources, and I think that's really important for any of us who hunt and fish, is to respect our resources. And you know, when you take a deer, when you take a turkey, when you catch a few fish or this and that, sometimes when it's more difficult, yeah, we respect that resource more.
Yeah, you know what, and it's always, and this is me speaking, but a lot will agree, it's always when it becomes a crisis do we take notice.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree with that. And so we took notice. You know, now we're all seeing it and we're all respecting it.
Here's the other thing, David, that I find funny. When the goby first got here, here we go again, up in arms. Oh, my gosh, we got a problem. All of a sudden, they become a food source for smallmouth bass, lake trout. We're getting record, you know, we're getting records broken every year for smallmouth bass sizes. You know?
Oh, yeah. the goby is one of those things. I mean, it's a love-hate relationship again. I mean, this is hard to even talk about, but, you know, those gobies go in and they eat a lot of young fry. They eat a lot of eggs, let's say, from smallmouth bass or young fish. You pull a fish off a bed, those gobies go in there and chow on the young. Same thing with lake trout or anything. I mean, those gobies, there's just millions of them around. And, of course, they need to eat, and that's what they're going to do, is they're going to eat. So they're going to eat the fry and the eggs or do whatever if we don't manage that resource correctly. However, like you said, what a great food source. I'm going to tell you right now, the lake trout, that I kept one lake trout last week. Mm-hmm. We were up there catching Cisco's and lake trout, and the meat was bright red, almost like Copper River salmon from really? Up in Alaska, that kind of thing. It was the best tasting lake trout I've ever had. It was mild. I would rather have eaten it than a Great Lake salmon or anything like that. I mean, when fish eat alewives, They get a fishier flavor. It's just the way it is. But
sure.
You know, these lake trout are going in, and these Ciscos are going in, and they're chewing on these gobies by the billions up there in the shallows. And what a difference it's made in how we taste them.
You know, that's so funny. And again, it's not hurt the fishing industry either, because what did we do? We adapted, and we make them in goby colors and make them in goby shapes so it looks like a new food source, and we can try and get one more past the fish, and it's helping the economy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all these lure companies have, you know, goby patterns of this and that and everything else. But there's a reason, because these fish, it doesn't matter if it's a bass, a walleye, a lake trout, a cisco, a whatever, you know, it's a food source. Unfortunately, yes, gobies can be detrimental if we're not careful.
Now, so tell me, David A. Rose is our guest here at Wild Michigan. What do you have coming up? I mean, here we are. We're officially into summer. You know, the rivers are swollen. The Great Lakes are up, which is good. But what do you got planned now? I mean, you're doing a lot more fishing. What do you have coming up in the next few weeks for yourself?
You know, on the inland lakes around northern Michigan here, the environment is changing. So we went from spring pattern, which we're still kind of in because the waters are still kind of cool, even though we're officially into summer now and stuff like that, cooler than normal. They're higher than normal, what we were just talking about and stuff. So now I'm going to start getting into patterning, you know, fish in their summertime haunts. So walleye and stuff, suspended walleye up in the, when they're suspended high in the water column and whatnot, maybe trolling up in that upper reaches of the water column for walleyes, whether in the inland lakes or Great Lakes, smallmouth bass and all that kind of stuff. We might be finding them a little deeper. Perch fishing should start picking up in the Great Lakes. You know, Lake Michigan has been a wonderful resource for, if you want a perch dinner, I'll tell you what, now, you know, our limits are 25 per person, which is half of what it was in this neck of the woods. But the perch are good size and all that stuff, and that's plenty of fish. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, any of these kind of fish, looking at the patterns, you know, summer patterns. And then, of course, late summer's coming up, talking about the rivers and streams. You know, the trout start looking for terrestrials, you know, the crickets and the grasshoppers and all that kind of stuff. One of my favorite times to fly fish.
You know, it's so strange that here we are, we're almost in July. And once July hits, it's over with. I mean, summer to me flies right by, and here we go. We're talking September. We're talking steelhead fishing again. We're talking, you know, being in the river. It just amazes me how July is that point to me where everything flies right by.
Yeah, especially, you know, up here, I'm in a tourist mecca, you know, and we had the National Cherry Festival and all that kind of stuff, and we've got the big cherry festival, and I got the fabulous Thunderbirds flying over my house every day practicing right now and stuff like that, and it's like, you've got to be kidding me, summer's already here, and, you know, I swore it was just snowing a month ago.
Buddy, if I see Kim Wilson and Jimmy Vaughn flying over your house... Sorry, folks. Music reference. If you're a fabulous Thunderbirds,
that's right.
but I mean, it is that time, and you know what? It is festival season and summertime, but it's definitely a great time to get out and enjoy and be a part of what we got going on. And always, David, we appreciate you and your time and your knowledge, of course, sharing that with us here. And who knows? A lot of things coming up in the summer to get us up north. And thank you, Alex. Thank you, Alex Clark, for giving us some fabulous Thunderbirds.
There you go.
See what you started. More coming your way, being brought to you by Not Just Guns. Find them online at notjustguns.com.
Nick Munch of Michael Waddell's Bone Collector, and you're listening to my main man, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
Rifle in a gun rack, hanging in the back glass, book knife on my belt, ain't no lamp for sale around here.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Not Just Guns, located in Mason, Michigan. Cedar Street at 127. Wednesday nights is their gun auction night. And the next day, man, this is the great thing about Not Just Guns. Day after the auction, guns are ready. People are lined up getting their stuff, getting what they paid for, and you pay what you want to pay. That's what the beautiful thing about an auction is. And they do the rest. Check them out online, notjustguns.com. And we're going to speak with Doug Roberts from Conquest Sense right now. Living with the deer 24/7, 365. Doug, welcome back. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Duran. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks. And a very brief conversation we had off air is going to lead to questions I never thought about. Now, I know we've talked a little bit about how the high waters, and when there's a lot of water out there from the rains we've had and will still continue to get this year, affecting the rivers and the lakes and things of that nature. But we don't think about how it's affecting some of the ground wildlife, how it's affecting the ground nesting birds or even deer, because, I have seen more fawns in daytime and walking around and things like that, Doug, than I have ever seen.
Duran, you got a number of things. One, that a lot of the deer, the does and the fawns are being pushed out of their fawning areas because they're underwater. And so everybody's seeing deer out in the open much more right now because they can't get into the areas where they normally would be, one where it's lower, one where it's cooler. It's not that we've had warm weather, but they're flooded out. Everybody's got water standing in places that water has never stood before. And thank heavens it's been cool because we haven't had stagnant water up to this point.
Right. And one of the things I thought about was, well, you know what? We can really lower the risk of EHD this year so far because things have been wet. But like you said, stagnant standing water can cause issues as well.
Well, here's the problem we have. We've got more water than I think we've ever had. I mean, the Great Lakes are higher than I think they're at the highest they've ever been. You've got all these pools of water throughout the woods and the farmlands that normally wouldn't be there, and now we're going to get hit 80 degrees. So you have natural bacteria in the ground that are everywhere, but they congregate in these stagnant water pools, coccidiosis, giardia, EHD as it comes back, in the summer when it gets hot. There's many more. Well, as these fawns start drinking out of these stagnant water holes, because that's what they're going to do, they pick this up. Coccidia is a big one. It multiplies thousands of times per minute in their system, and it kills them very, very quickly. So, here on the farm, that's one of our greatest fears is how do we get rid of all of the water and dry everything up quickly before these fawns start drinking out of those stagnant water holes.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be an issue till we realize it's an issue. And we don't think about it. I mean, Sarah and I were driving down the road out to my dad's place out in Langsburg. She's like, oh, I just wish I could see a fawn. Boom, there it is. I mean, seconds after she said it, here's one standing right by the edge of the field. Again, these are low-lying areas where there's a lot of flooding occurring that normally wouldn't be this time of year.
Yeah, it's changed all of the habitat. I mean, from the ground animals, to the deer. And again, hopefully, I mean, look at the farms. Nothing is being planted. Normally, by 4th of July, which is next week, the corn's, the corn's knee-high by the 4th mm-hmm. of July. Well, a lot of the deer bed in those cornfields. So there are no cornfields. They're not able to hide. And so that's why we're seeing so many more of them. And again, if we don't get a lot of these fields in, what are they going to eat throughout the summer and going into the fall? It really could cause a long-term predicament that could be very, very stressful on the deer herd here in Michigan and other states that are having the water problem.
Doug Roberts is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Doug, it brings to mind, too, I know there's a very small amount of people listening that do food plots, and some of my friends that actually do food plots have said, we finally got like one in, and, we're waiting on the other five. There's some serious issues with that. It's not just the farmers, it's the people trying to help and improve their deer herd as well.
Yeah, like Lincoln Roan is my cousin. He's got that Packer Max, and nobody can get out of these fields. I mean, the hay fields can't get cut and all of this stuff. Now, the good thing is once it does start to dry up, we as hunters can still get our food plots in, but we may lose our spring food plot. We may just have to go to a short summer one and then get into a fall food plot. But on the other side of the coin, Duran, if the farmers don't get their crops in, those food plots are going to become very, very desirable to the deer because it's going to be one of the main food sources in that area. So it could end up being, it could end up making for a great hunting season come fall once you can get those food plots in.
Doug Roberts, our guest here in Wild Michigan from Conquest Sense. Doug, the browse, what the deer are eating right now, it's lush, it's green. When they can get to the spots where they're used to, not an issue, apparently.
No, right now there's plenty of green growth everywhere. It might be damp. And again, if the water stays, digestibility intake for an animal, especially a white-tailed deer, is totally dependent on the water content in that plant. And right now, all the plants are maxed out. So when a deer does eat a plant, it's getting maximum energy out of what it's eating and into the system. So the deer right now with what they have is very, very healthy. But if we were to go all of a sudden now into a drought and we don't have any, farmers' fields planted with anything,
mm-hmm.
we could run into a big problem. So it's a wait and see thing. We're all dependent on Mother Nature.
Now, a buddy of mine, he's a big time waterfowler, and when he talks about what the geese eat during the summer, it's the cool foods, the greens, and then yep. what he calls the hot foods, the grains, the corn, the beans, and the things of that nature. I can see, like you said, where it's could be a big issue, which won't hurt the farmers' feelings any, but at the same time, it could have an impact on how the deer herd is, especially come wintertime.
Oh my goodness! It's gonna impact the geese, the ducks, the deer, all of that, just because they don't have those hot foods. That's what builds the fat content for the winter, the cornfields, the soybeans, those type of things. That's how they pack that extra weight on and get that fat layer through. And if it's not there, and they don't have the fat layer, and we have another winter like we just came through, you're gonna lose a large number of deer just to freezing and starvation, because their body's going to feed off itself to create heat and energy, and that can only last so long.
Right. Now, in your opinion, how did we do last, with the long, never-ending winter that we had?
Actually, I think we did very well. I think overall the deer herd did very well. What it does do, I always kind of like those little polar dips because it really tells you the health of a deer herd. The weak ones are going to drop over dead. The strong survive, which makes you a stronger, better, healthier deer herd overall. I think we did well. Everyone's seeing a lot of animals everywhere throughout the state of Michigan from when I'm talking to them. So I think we came out of the winter, which was a hard winter, exceptionally well.
Yeah, we've been seeing, again, a lot of deer. I mean, probably a few more than normal because of the weather and everything. But yeah. Boy, I tell you what, are they red right now? Holy yep. cow! I've never seen colors like this.
Yeah, it's contrasting against such a green background. But boy, they are. They're just that beautiful, gorgeous, that rust red summer coat for that cooler weather. I should say a cooler coat for that warmer weather.
Right. But, absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
Doug Roberts is our guest here. We're going to speak more with him. You can find out what he's up to and find all the new products at conquestsense.com. And don't forget, look for that ATA-approved sticker on Conquest Sense because they are ATA-approved and perfect for your next hunting adventure coming up in the fall. It's Wild Michigan.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State. being brought to you by Conquest Sense. Find them online, conquestsense.com. And we are speaking with Doug Roberts of Conquest Sense right now. And Doug, you have got a live feed on the YouTube, because I like to put the in front of everything, on the YouTube. Now, this is the largest typical three-year-old male in the country that you have, and you have a live cam on his area.
That's correct, Duran. Kaiser, at 3 years old, you know, in the deer farming industry, took first as a three-year-old. He grossed out at 238 inches, typical at three. But the live deer cam, what's cool about that is it's 24/7 on YouTube. It's just Conquest live deer cam, and you can watch him grow his four-year-old set. And I can tell you right now, his four-year-old set is bigger at this point in time than he was as a three-year-old. So if he keeps going, he'll outdo his three-year-old set. So it's kind of fun to watch. I even get on at night, and I just get on and I kind of watch the deer in the pen. You know, it's one of the pens we can't see from the house. kind of fun to watch your own deer on a camera.
It is. I'm actually watching right now. There's not a whole lot going on, but at least it's nice out there.
It's nice. It's sunny and it's getting warm. So they're all back in the woods where it's probably 10 degrees cooler. And you'll see them right around noon, 1 o'clock. They'll all come running up. They'll get a quick bite to eat. They'll get a drink of water and they'll all run back into the woods. and then they'll come out in the evening. So when it starts to cool down.
It was cool. I don't know what it was. It just flew by that camera, but it was a rocket, man. So you can watch that on YouTube. Find it. The Conquest Deer live camera is going on. And let's talk about, you know, out of the controlled, I would say semi-controlled, because you can't control the weather and what they do within the confines of their area, which is a pretty large area, it seems. But let's talk about wild deer right now. They're getting lots of water through the plants, a lot of greenery right now. But we don't have that heat. We don't have that heat raising the blood pressure of the deer, sending it through the blood through the antlers and giving it that growth. But, I mean, is it or is it not affecting, you know, good antler growth this year?
Right now, I would say it's not affecting. What's happening is they're getting so much nutrition out of every mouthful because of the water content, and everything is lush and it's fresh. So they're getting a tremendous amount. I think we're fine right now as far as antler growth. It sure would be nice to see July and August ramp up those temperatures, because we do know when that blood pressure increases a little bit, the blood flow is going faster through the antlers, and it's putting more calcium up there, which pushes more antler out. You know, years ago, I told you we did that study up in Canada, and on a hot, humid, hazy day, we had our mature bucks pushing 2.5 inches of antler in 24 hours. Wow. That's a tremendous amount of antler. You know, but again, it took that very specific, hot, humid, hazy day where they just couldn't cool down as much, and it just, the blood flow just pumped it. So you had a lot of extras and a lot of big antler.
Now, we have this ban on baiting and supplemental feeding and you know, nutrients and minerals, things of that nature, which I don't think is going to stop a lot of people. Again, not encouraging illegal activity, but the products are still legal to buy. They're legal to own. You just technically can't put them out. And
correct.
They're going to go out.
Yeah, they are, and I think in some areas, I think the deer are going to need it, especially come fall. Again, talking with the farmers, and that's what I meant. A lot of the farmers have decided they're not planting. It's just gotten too late. They still haven't got in. If they don't get in this week, pretty much how do they get anything in? They won't get it. But so it may be the hunters, even though it's illegal, and again, I'm not saying they should do it either. It's a personal decision, but I will say up in the northeast corner, we have to be very careful. The TB area seems to be spreading. Mm-hmm. That seems to be an issue, and that's one disease that can transfer to humans very, very quickly through the air, so we need to be extremely careful of not congregating deer up in that zone, because that is an issue. I will say that, so I hope the hunters don't feed up in that area for that reason, because it spreads very, very quickly and it can be very detrimental to us as humans.
Well, you know, and the thing is, too, I don't know what's being talked about, what has been talked about behind closed doors regarding this issue. You know, will we see a change? Will we see lawmakers say, you know what, it's going to be okay, just maintain or reduce the amount you're putting in?
Yeah, right now I'm in all those meetings and have privy to information, and the DNR, the NRC commission, they're holding their ground. They're not going to reverse the baiting and feeding ban for this year. And what do they do in the future? I don't know. That's a decision they have to make. I think they'll look at the CWD, the infection rate, is the area going to spread again? There's a number of things, but beginning of the year, I would have thought that it would have been reversed, but it kind of locked down. There's a lot of legislators that there's some bills that put in to legislate it back in to allow baiting and feeding, and I just don't see those going anywhere. Again, if you look at the Lower Peninsula, Duran, and you look at the area of CWD infection, that 16 county, then you take the TB area up there and how many counties it has, that's about half the Lower Peninsula. And I think based on that it's already half of the Lower Peninsula has an issue, I think that's why they just did it statewide.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that CWD zone is going to expand again this fall, and we know the TB zone just added two more counties. So that being the case, logically, I think the DNR said, let's just ban it statewide in the Lower Peninsula rather than pick and choose areas and then have to change them again, which is, it can be very confusing. So I've tried to find some rationale in that,
sure,
that thought process. And I think that's where it come from. And I can't disagree with the DNR on that.
No, I understand. In the beginning, there was some question. And yeah, I did question, and I questioned the MUCC and their position on it. But as we move forward, I'm still questioning things. I'm always going to question things. I'm not just going to go, okay, I'll go along with it. You know, that's not my nature.
Right. We need to. I mean, the big argument now is, what's the difference of a little bait pile of 2 gallons and a food plot that you're still congregating deer? And again, if the farmers don't get their fields in, that food plot is going to be a huge congregation of deer in most areas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. With CWD, we don't know. You got some researchers that say baiting and feeding does not do anything to spread the disease until your incidence rate gets over 1%. You have others that just are the old school. Anywhere you congregate animals, you increase the chance of spreading disease. We know that science was done on bacterial and viral infections, which tuberculosis is. That study's never been done on prions. So that's where some of them are arguing and going, you've never studied this, so why are you using this old science to fit a new disease?
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, they have no studies, or they have nothing else to go on, so we're just going to do the status quo. And that status quo may be right. We really don't know, because the studies haven't been done. But there's so much research being done right now that is just on the edge of hopefully slowing CWD down or stopping CWD. And I know the DNR I think this weekend through MSU, just made a decision on spending some of their money actually on research to try to stop and fix CWD rather than just finding it. So it's a good step forward.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, now we've established the problem, let's figure out how to fix it. So
exactly, and that's been the downfall. Our industry has spent millions trying to figure that out, and we need help from the agencies, the states, and so on, and we're finally starting to see that happen. So it's looking good.
Well, good. It's always good to hear some encouraging news, and both you guys today have given us that, and we appreciate that a great deal. Appreciate all you do with us here from the end of Conquest Sense, and again, the live cam on the YouTube. Look up for the Conquest live deer cam on YouTube, and you'll see the largest 3-year-old grow out those 4-year-old antlers And we maybe we'll all take a lesson in letting them grow a little bit, get a little bit older.
Makes a little difference when they get older.
It does. It doesn't have to be 300 inches, but you know what? It's halfway there is always a start. So
it's a good place to start.
All right, Doug Roberts, appreciate you as always. ConquestSense.com, NotJustGuns.com, and David A. Rose. Find him at WildFishing.com here on Wild Michigan.